All right, a colder looking weekly update than what has been usual lately, because even though it's summer, because I'm in Melbourne, it's kind of not summer, because that's what Melbourne's like. Well, actually, yesterday was like summer. Friday was like summer, 34 degrees something Celsius. Today, 15, because this is what Melbourne does. And rainy and miserable and everything else. So let me begin by talking about what I've been doing this week, and then how I got sick, and then all the other things. So, where was I last week? I think I was on the Gold Coast. Anyway, I kind of lose track. Regardless, this week I know where I've been. This week that's just gone past. I went to the Microsoft Technology Center on Monday. So Microsoft has this MTC, as they acronym the thing, in Sydney, where they've got a whole bunch of their cool tech stuff. I did a talk for a bunch of Microsoft customers on cyber things. So I spent a couple of hours with them on Monday morning doing that bit. Tuesday, I went to the Ping Identity Conference. I think they actually call the conference Ping Identify. The company is Ping Identity. Does a whole bunch of identity things, and of course, identity ties in pretty well with the things that I do around have I been pwned and data breaches and so on. So this was a case where I go along and I talk to everyone about the cybers. This was at Pier 1 in Sydney, which is kind of cool because it's just beneath the Harbour Bridge. And I had this sort of epic stage where there's windows behind me, and behind me is just like Harbour Bridge everywhere. So fortunately, they closed the blinds for a talk because I don't think anyone would have paid attention otherwise. But that was a great talk there in terms of, I mean, look, it's not that I'm self-ingratiating saying my talk was great, but I got a lot of good engagement from people. Now, interestingly, as a speaker, I can do the same talk in 10 different places and have 10 different, totally different experiences. And the Sydney one was really positive. There's just a lot of energy and engagement. And for me as a speaker, it makes a huge amount of difference when the people there are really enjoying themselves. And I really strongly got that sense on Tuesday in Sydney. So then headed down to Melbourne, then in Melbourne on Thursday, did the same thing again for Ping. Different audience, same talk. So did that. And then had a dinner with the folks at Ping on Thursday night as well. And this was by the time I was actually starting to get sick. Now, as you can probably gather, my schedule and my year in general has been a little bit hectic for many, many different reasons. And what I find is if I get tired and run down, I tend to end up with a throat infection where I can sort of feel it in my throat, and it's just like, it ends up being like razor blades, and it's there for a couple of days. Sometimes I lose my voice, develops into a cold, and that's it. And on the weekend, I was just starting to feel that in the throat again, going, ah, crap, here we go again. And I sort of gave it a couple of days, and I was like, this feels really bad, but I'm not losing my voice or anything. And I didn't manage to get to actually see a doctor until Thursday. And the guy's like, okay, so the good news is that, like, you've got a throat infection, but it's minor. My ears are a little bit sore, but he's like, no ear infection. But you've got ulcers on the back of your throat, which is just as painful as it sounds. And I get mouth ulcers occasionally, like if I get run down, but they're normally like on the side of your tongue or on your lip or something like that. But this hurt like a bastard. Like, this was at the back of my throat, right at the point where the infection was as well. And every single thing I swallowed was just pain. Coffee was pain. Beer was pain. You know how much it hurts me to drink beer and go, this actually hurts? And particularly, especially hoppy beers with the bitterness. It was terrible. So that was absolutely rotten on Thursday. Unfortunately, I still managed to do my talk okay. The doctor basically said, here's some antibiotics to make sure that it doesn't turn into anything worse than what it already is. Other than that, good luck, mate, and some Nurofen, so basically ibuprofen to try and take away some of the pain. So that was pretty crap, really. That was really miserable. It's really miserable to be like chewing food, going, "Oh, this food's delicious." I'm really sad. I'm going to have to swallow it, and it's going to hurt. So that fortunately has improved quite a bit, but yeah, I'm still not quite 100%. So I do need to try and get a little bit of rest and maybe not burn the candle at every single end at the same time. Good luck with that. Anyway, moving on. I still got my sense of humour, at least. Moving on. Scott is doing, Scott being Scott Helm, is doing a Hack Yourself workshop, a Hack Yourself First workshop, which of course is my workshop I've been doing for many years, and Scott does them in other parts of the world as well. He is doing one in Amsterdam on December 9 and 10. I'm going to link through to that. If you are anywhere in Europe and can get to Amsterdam quickly and easily, you can go and do Scott's workshop, which is kind of my workshop, but we do them together. So that's going to be good. And, of course, Amsterdam's a super cool place to hang out as well. If you've not been to Amsterdam and you have access to it, go and do it because it's kind of amazing. So I'll link through to that. A couple of other things here as well that popped up this week. And one of them relates to a company called Zoho. Now, what's the right way to explain exactly what Zoho does? There's a funny story here, and it actually impacted one of my talks this week. So Zoho does online CRM software. Engage prospects and close more deals. Try Zoho's AI-powered CRM today. There you go. Now it's clear exactly what they do. Anyway, I have been using Zoho in a number of my talks for quite some time, and I use them to explain why password composition rules are screwy. And the context I use Zoho in, let's put it in chronology. I've been using them for a long time. I used them on Tuesday when I did that ping talk. The context is, when we look at this traditional sense of password strength, we used to say password composition rules are important. Let's require an uppercase, a lowercase, a number, a non-alphanumeric character, and then at least like 8 characters long. And the talks that I've been doing, every time I do this talk, no matter where I do it in the world, and I say to people, and do this in your own mind as I read it out, I say to people, let's imagine you want to have an all lowercase password. And you go to a website, and the website says you need to have an uppercase character. What are you going to do? And everyone's like, you're going to uppercase the capital, or you're going to capitalize the first letter. It's like, right, exactly. Everyone all over the world, no matter what your culture is or your background or anything, everyone does that. And then I go, okay, you need a number. What do you do? Oh, I'm going to put a 1 at the end. Everyone everywhere. Non-alphanumeric character, what do you do? I'm going to put an exclamation mark at the end. This is why password composition rules of this form just simply don't work, because people just reproduce these fundamentally common patterns. And I'll look at the audience and I'll go, you guys all know this. What do you reckon the chances are the hackers have worked this out? It's like, oh yeah. So there's been guidance from the likes of NIST and the NCSC in recent years saying stop doing that because it doesn't actually do anything. It's security theater. And to demonstrate how crazy this is, I have been using Zoho because a while back, must have been, I reckon about 18 months ago, they redid something on their auth system. They made an announcement that says a lot of deliberation went into these new password requirements and, you know, the new auth system, you know, here it is, go for it. And I show how you could go to Zoho and you could create a password of password with a capital P, an at symbol and a 0 instead of an O, and Zoho accepts it. Because it meets the composition requirements. Uppercase, lowercase, number, non-alphanumeric, 8 characters long, job done, everyone goes home happy. Except that that's obviously a terrible password. And then I go down and I show, all right, let's try this. Let's use a passphrase. And I go to one of these websites online that can generate a passphrase. It chooses 4 random dictionary words, all lowercase, spaces between them. And I go, let's try this on Zoho. And Zoho comes back and says, no, that's not a good password. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And then the funny thing is, every now and then someone argues with me, they say, no, the passphrase isn't very good because it's dictionary words. And I'm like, you're not very good at maths, are you? You know, like, how many dictionary words are there? Say it's a couple of 100,000. Now you've got 4 of them, and the position matters. I don't know how many total possible permutations that leads to. I just know that that number has a lot of commas in it. It's ridiculous. Like, passphrases like that are fantastic. So I kept using Zoho as an example. And then we get to Thursday, and between feeling sorry for myself because of my throat and actually preparing for the talk that afternoon, I see a tweet from Zoho. And in fact, I'll read you what this tweet says. I'm going to link to it in the notes, but you'll realize the significance of this in just a moment. Why isn't there an easy way of just clicking on URLs in OneNote? If only I knew someone from Microsoft. All right, so here's the tweet. We've added a new feather to our security hat. Breached password check. Here's how Zoho protects your account from unseen threats. Anyway, they're now using Pwn passwords from Have I Been Pwned to block previously breached passwords, which means my example that I keep giving in all these talks is now dead because that no longer works. And I'm really, really happy for them that they've done this. And I'm really, really happy that I was able to do that talk on Thursday and go, so here's the talk I normally do. By the way, this is no longer true because Zoho is now using Pwn passwords, which is super cool. I'm super happy with that. I just thought that was funny. I don't know if they've ever seen the talk either. If you're from Zoho and you've seen that talk and that was the reason why you did it, let me know. But I would be quite happy if you just came to this conclusion of your own free volition as well. So that's Zoho. That's passwords. Good outcome for those guys. Now, a couple of other things. I had someone actually email me and ask a question, and I said I'd do it in this week's update. And it was after last week's update where I was talking about the Zooville data breach. So this was the Zoophilia and Bestiality website. If those terms don't make sense, go back and watch last week's blog post or last week's update, and then I'm sorry that you had to watch that and actually learn those terms. However, he asked a question. He says, are you ever worried and concerned when you have to go to an unusual or unknown website to find contact information? You could unexpectedly go on one of those sites and come across material of a nature one should never have to see. Is there a boundary that you will never cross? Is there material / content boundary that if come across during your work that you will report to the police? Also, are you worried that the content you come across during your work might come back to haunt you? All right, so let's break it down. Are you ever worried or concerned when you go to an unusual website to find contact information? I'm not worried about it. Like, if I was worried about sharing my IP address, I'd go there over Tor, I'd go there over a VPN. If I didn't want to be tracked, I'd go there incognito over a VPN or just use the Tor browser bundle. So I'm not worried about that bit. I'm not worried about drive-by attacks on a fully patched Windows Chrome instance, or particularly running a Tor browser which won't run active scripts and things like that anyway. So I'm not worried about that. Yes, you could unexpectedly go to one of those websites and come across material of a nature no one should ever have to see. That is kind of the nature of the internet. I mean, even not doing what I do, you have that risk. I'm sure you've all sort of clicked on something before and gone, oh, shit, I wish I hadn't seen that. Like, I would have been better off not having seen that. So that's possible, but that really doesn't worry me that much. Is there a boundary that you will never cross? I mean, yeah, sure, there's plenty of boundaries. There's, you know, things that I mean, let's pick an easy example. One of my personal boundaries is I will never try someone else's credentials on a website. If there's a data breach and there's plain text email addresses and passwords, I will never try and authenticate to the account. I don't need to. There are other ways of verifying it. This is, you know, possibly now coming a cropper of things like Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. I don't want to have that problem. I don't need to have that problem. In terms of boundaries of content, honestly, no, I don't think there's a boundary I wouldn't cross, simply because if someone sent me a data breach of the most recalcitrant thing that you can imagine, I can't imagine me going, nah, I just don't want to deal with this. And I guess the reason why is because it needs to be dealt with. There are people in there who have had their personal information exposed, not necessarily because they're into whatever it is in that site. It might be because someone else signed them up. Even if it is people who were into that thing, there's going to be a bunch of them that went there with their work email. This is the sort of thing that people monitoring domains actually really want to know about. I mean, let's say it's the Zooville example. There were corporate domains that were subscribed to Have I Been Pwned domain monitoring. Those domain admins or who is responsible for the website and can verify control the domain now have emails. They need to know. I just can't think of a circumstance where I wouldn't want them to know unless, and this kind of leads to the next point about reporting to police, unless there was a legal request not to highlight the website or not to load the website. Now, in terms of if there's things I'd report to the police, yes, absolutely. Things that are illegal, clearly illegal. And part of the discussion last week was that the very weird, and trust me, it's weird for me, just as weird for you, the very weird thing about the whole sort of zoophilia and bestiality thing is that it is legal in a bunch of places. Now, I don't even know where the service was running. I don't know where the people signing up to the service were from, but it is legal in a bunch of places. You can imagine other things that are outright illegal no matter where you are. And if ever I came across that sort of stuff, then there's a whole bunch of people in government and law enforcement that I would ping very, very quickly. And I think like, let's be direct about it. If it was like child exploitation material, yep, absolutely, bang, straight to law enforcement, and I would not be proceeding with loading that data unless they were confident that that was the right thing to do. So absolutely, I'd report that sort of stuff. Also, are you worried that the content you come across during your work might come back to haunt you? Now, I think I took away from that, like, am I going to have bad dreams? You know, or is this going to, yeah, am I going to have PTSD from having seen this stuff? I'm not worried about it insofar as that's yet to happen. I mean, I've seen some weird shit, don't get me wrong. Some of it is super, super weird. And I don't mean to make light of it, but it's just weird. I'm yet to see something that really I found damaging. I mean, frankly, I would say that the closest I've come to something haunting me insofar as it kept playing on my mind after, you know, over and over and over and over again was after the Ashley Madison data breach. I wrote a blog post about here's what Ashley Madison members have told me. And it was a selection of emails from a huge amount of correspondence I got from people that were members of the site, and they were sharing with me what the impact of this was on them. And the one that resonated the most is some guy said something like, you know, kiss your kids goodnight tonight. I'm not sure they'll ever see mine again. Yeah, that to me, and maybe because it's something I could relate to having kids, that hit much closer to home to me than some of the stuff I saw on that Zooville website the other day. I just go, well, that's just weird shit, and I can lock that away and sort of file it. But things that I can relate to more personally, that you know, I still think about that, but I don't think haunting is the right word. So look, it's the internet. We know there's a bunch of weird stuff out there. The nature of what I do means I'm going to get exposed to a bunch of it. I try and do the best I can under the circumstances, make judgment calls on it, and try not to. I do feel that for the most part, there's a little box in my mind. I put it in the box. I deal with it. It's done. Chuck the box away. It just doesn't worry me that much. And hopefully I won't yet see stuff that will change my view on that. So that's that one. Now, another one, and this occupied a bunch of my Twitter this week, Adobe. So Adobe had another data breach. Now, this is not good. It almost feels like life has come full circle. You know, I'm sort of right at the tail end of this have I been pwned started because of the Adobe data breach, the one that had the 152 million odd records in 2013. And now the tweet that I've shared here is Adobe exposed nearly 7.5 million Creative Cloud accounts to the public. And there's a story on Mashable, so I'll link through to this. And the story basically goes that, just in case you're not aware, Creative Cloud is Adobe's sort of software as a service model. So back in the day, you would buy a license of Photoshop, and then you would own the software for however long you wanted to use it for. And then if you wanted the new version, 2 years later, you have to pay for it and upgrade it. Creative Cloud just keeps rolling all the updates. I'm a Creative Cloud user myself. I assume my data is probably in this. I'm quite happy with that model for reasons that I will explain later on. Anywho, says here, nearly 7.5 million Adobe Creative accounts were exposed to the public. The database containing the sensitive user info discovered by security researcher Bob Dychenko. Bob Dychenko been a good provider of some data to have I been pwned in the past as well. Thanks to Bob. Was accessible to anyone through a web browser. Ah, jeez. Exposed data for nearly 7.5 million accounts. Good email address, the Adobe products I was subscribed to, account creation date, subscription and payment status, local time zone, member ID, time of last login, and whether they were an Adobe employee. I wouldn't call this sensitive. There is actually a strict definition for sensitive PII, and it usually comes back to things like religion, race, sexuality, not date of birth. Date of birth, to the best of my knowledge, is not classified as sensitive in any jurisdictions. So anyway, that's not great. Adobe's made a statement here. At Adobe, we believe transparency with our customers is important. As such, we wanted to share a security update. Anyway, they found there was a prototype environment which exposed the data. Is this testing? It's not testing in prod, but it's testing with prod data? Like, how often does that happen? Boy. The environment contained Creative Cloud customer information, including email addresses, but did not include any passwords or financial information. The issue was not connected to or did not affect the operation of any Adobe Core products or services. So Creative Cloud is not an Adobe product or service? Anyway, this is not the reason I'm raising it here, because for the most part, this is just another day in data breach land. The reason I'm raising it here is there are some trends in the responses to my tweet which I don't agree with, some sentiments. There are multiple sentiments that I don't agree with, and I actually sort of just kept a little note of them as they popped up and I saw them echoed by people. One of them was people shouldn't use the cloud. People blaming cloud for this. It's not cloud's fault. Like, we had data breaches before cloud. Someone left data publicly facing and didn't put a password on it, is what it sounds like to me. Either that or it's a database backup that they put somewhere, same deal, data publicly facing without a password. We can't blame cloud for this. Look, cloud does allow you to screw stuff up very, very fast. That's one less redeeming attribute of cloud. But we can't blame cloud for people not putting a password on a service. I mean, would you feel better if it wasn't Adobe Creative Cloud, but it was just like Adobe Creative Services and it just ran on Adobe's own servers somewhere? And maybe it is actually Adobe's own services. I don't know. Maybe it's not AWS or something like that. So just blaming cloud just seems weird. Another point here, a bunch of people were saying, because of this, you should use other products. You shouldn't use Photoshop and Illustrator and Premiere and all this sort of stuff. You should use other products, as if somehow that will fix data breaches. Now, I think they're partly saying it because A, they had a data breach, B, this actually the second data breach. So I think it's the two things combined. The problem is that that sentiment implies that because of the prevalence of these incidents, or because of the fact there has been an incident, because I certainly see people say this after just one stuff up by an organization as well, they're implying that because this has happened before, there is a higher likelihood of it happening again, and you should go to another provider who possibly hasn't had an incident. I assume not had an incident, otherwise it would be a little bit, it would be a bit contradictory, wouldn't it? I would actually argue the contrary, play devil's advocate. Adobe has got massive egg on their face over this. Like, these guys are honestly getting an absolute bollocking over this, as they rightfully should. The chances of them doing a better job of their security after this are much higher than a competitor who hasn't had to go through this process doing a better job. Now, maybe you want to just beat them because they've stuffed up, and I understand that, but that is a different thing to implying that you somehow have a greater risk due to the fact that they had this breach. I don't see any correlation there whatsoever. I understand the sentiment, but if you put the emotion down a second, step back from the keyboard and look at it objectively, I don't see any greater risk by continuing to use Adobe Creative Cloud. I haven't even considered cancelling my subscription because I like Photoshop and Illustrator and all the rest of it, and I know it well. And for all the people out there saying, you know, what you should do now is get rid of them and go and use another product, I don't want to go through the learning curve. What actually competes with Photoshop these days? I mean, properly. Properly? Not much. Maybe something else which you'll then have to learn. So, no, that just doesn't make any sense. People were also saying that this is why you should pirate software. You're basically saying, pirate software so I don't have to leave personal information on another service. Well, there is the whole, you know, possibly copying a massive fine for doing it. There's, you know, that is not a particularly enjoyable prospect for me. I appreciate that many people do because they're constrained by money or resources or just philosophically think all software should be free, whatever. But that is the risk you take when you do that. I know it's a little bit different when it's subscription, when it is a subscription service, but if it's another product and you're purchasing it and you've got to leave some details, use a spam account or something like that. Don't leave anything sensitive of personal nature. You know, like, there are ways around this stuff. And actually, on that point, a lot of people were blaming the fact that Creative Cloud is a software as a service model now for the reason this happened. I'll tell you what, if you went and bought Photoshop outright, you would still need to leave your details. You still have a repository of your information somewhere. The fact that they're now provisioning updates as they happen and always shipping you the newest version, that's not the thing that makes your data vulnerable. It's giving your data to another party, which makes it vulnerable. And you've got to do that either way. The final one here, and I often see this, and this is a real sort of odd one to my mind, is enough people to allow me to actually make a note about it, were claiming that they saw an uptick in spam following this. Now, that is possible, that whoever got hold of this database is now using it to send spam. The problem is there's a lot of different reasons why you might start to get spam. including all the data breaches that you're already in and that I'm already in that we don't know about yet. It's really hard to correlate an incident like that with an uptick in spam unless you've got a lens across enough of the spam to then be able to say, well, there is actually a really high correlation between the email addresses receiving the spam and the email addresses exposed in the breach. Other than that, just individuals popping up going, I get a lot of spam, that's because you get a lot of spam. It doesn't necessarily mean it's from Adobe. Now, I don't mean to sort of get around being an Adobe apologist the whole time because that's not the intention, but it just bugs me when people get either irrationally paranoid or lay blame at places that just doesn't make sense. So that's my view on all the Adobe things. I just felt that the whole thing got a little bit carried away. Anyway, so this week's sponsor, now that I got through all that, this week's sponsor is Varonis. So Varonis has a free video course, 7 hidden Office 365 settings you can only unlock with PowerShell. As I mentioned before, I've done a bunch of courses for Varonis in the past as well, which they've made for free. This one's free as well. Go and check them out. They do great work, and I really appreciate them not just supporting me, but supporting everyone else by making content free for everyone else. So if nothing else, go and check them out and give them a big thank you just for that, because they do have a bunch of really, really cool content out there. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to come to you from somewhere all new, but I will disclose that when I get to that point next week. In the meantime, thank you very much for watching. I am pushing this out a day late because, frankly, I felt absolutely rotten yesterday because of my throat. I will try and get this edited, published, and up by the end of my day on Saturday. I'll catch you from somewhere else next week, hopefully warmer next week.